Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. One industry has perhaps the most profound impact on the future of humanity and, not incidentally, personal wealth. We're talking tech today, and we're setting aside the idealism of innovation and connectivity to look at the reality of an industry plagued with abuse and sexual harassment, stark gender inequality, and vicious online trolling. Trolling that might not exist in the way it does now if enough women had helped lay the groundwork for how we behave online. Bloomberg TV journalist Emily Chang takes on the tech industry in her new book, Brotopia, Breaking Up the Boys Club of Silicon Valley. She joins us now on the phone. Emily Chang, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
Let's go back a little bit and realize that the problems that we're seeing today in the tech industry didn't necessarily have to be that way. There was a way. There was a time when women were starting to really get involved in this industry. What happened?
I'm so glad you're shining a light on that, because in the 40s and 50s, women actually played vital roles in the computing industry. They were programming computers for the military and for NASA, and it was actually considered more women's work because it was associated with typing and secretarial jobs. And when people started to realize, well, actually, this is very important intellectual work, and the jobs became higher status and higher paying, men effectively pushed women out. The industry was looking so desperately for new programmers that they devised these personality tests to identify people that they thought would be good at the job. And what they decided is that people who make good programmers, quote, don't like people. Well, there's no evidence to support the idea that people who don't like people are better at this job than anyone else. But there is evidence to support the idea that if you're looking for people who don't like people, you'll hire far more men than women. And that perpetuated the stereotype of this antisocial white male nerd that persists to this day.
And there's some real campaigns. You talk about some of the advertising or educational campaigns about how to save money and get rid of the sort of gossiping female workforce that's plaguing your industry a little bit. So it was intentional. It was not sort of an accidental thing.
You know, I think some might say they were ignorant, but at this point, in my view, ignorance can only be willful. And, you know, over time, we saw this stereotype play out, not just in computer labs and classrooms, where women were getting 37% of computer science degrees in 1984. Today, that's down to 18%. But we're seeing it play out at the highest levels of these companies. In, the middle of last year, a young engineer at Google named James Damore wrote a memo to the company that went viral, in which he argued that men are simply more biologically suited for this work than women. And, you know, some people may not say it out loud just that way, but he was basically repeating the same toxic and lazy assumptions that were made in the 60s and 70s, and it is that attitude, I believe, that has kept women out of this industry for far too long.
Let's talk about the potential impact of that, because it's about more than there just being a ceiling that might impact a woman's pay, although that's very significant and a real thing to look at. But it's impacting all of us because of why? What's the widespread influence of this disparity?
Silicon Valley is changing our lives every day. This is an industry that is controlling what we see, how we communicate, what we read, how we shop. It's making the video games that our children are playing, the social media that they use. This is not just tech's problem or Silicon Valley's problem. This is a cultural problem. We're talking about an industry that has more power over our lives than perhaps any other. And 95% of these decisions can't be made by men. You know, I have three young sons, and I fully believe that their lives will be better in a more inclusive world. In fact, I dedicate the book to them. And I also know that there are so many mothers and fathers out there who want their children to succeed here, but their daughters won't stand a chance if something doesn't change. And in fact, we need people of all backgrounds to be making these products because billions of people of all backgrounds are using them.
Let's talk about some specifics. Let's talk about trolling. How could internet trolling have been impacted or sort of played out differently in society if we could have really rearranged the way these programs were being designed?
This is a really important thought exercise that I did as I was writing. You know, I thought to myself, what if women built the internet? What if they had been represented in more equal numbers from the start? How different our world might be. And I interviewed Evan Williams, who's the co-founder of Twitter, who told me that he believes if there were more women on the founding team of Twitter, that online harassment and trolling would not be such a problem. He said they just weren't thinking about this when they were developing the product. They were thinking about all the wonderful and amazing things that could be done with Twitter, not how could it be used to send death threats. And in fact, women are actually on the receiving end of the more extreme forms of harassment. So we're talking about how Twitter might have been designed differently with more voices at the table. You know, and I think across the industry, you know, maybe not just trolling, but maybe video games wouldn't be so violent, or porn wouldn't be so ubiquitous, or we'd have better parental controls on things like YouTube and some of these other services out there. And, you know, the other point I would make is it's not too late. It wasn't always this way, and it doesn't have to be this way ad infinitum. You know, we can start including women today and give them the role that it's not just the right thing to do, but the smart thing to do to include them.
So is the idea there, help me see if I understand this right, that if women were in the room at the table planning out how a platform like Twitter would work, because they experienced more harassment, they would have seen the possibilities for abuse or for this kind of use, whereas some men, just that wasn't part of their personal experience, and therefore they weren't doing it, they weren't victims of it, so it didn't cross their minds. Is that kind of the right direction?
Absolutely. I mean, empathy is a very important part of consumer product design and sort of understanding users and how they will be impacted by things and react to these things. And so the people who make the product need to understand how users will receive them. Another example that I talk about is in the book is Sheryl Sandberg. When she got to Facebook, she started asking questions that people weren't asking, along the lines of, why are we leaving this content up? This content is, you know, violent towards women. Why would we, you know, leave rape jokes on the site? And it was questions that Mark Zuckerberg and other people on the team simply weren't asking. And what was really important about that example is that Zuckerberg, you know, made as much space for Sheryl to come in and start asking these questions as she did for him. And he really approached it from a platform-wide perspective, and she would approach it from an individual's perspective. How is this going to make someone feel in their dorm room in the middle of Massachusetts, let's say? And I believe that's why Facebook has a much better handle on online harassment and trolling than Twitter does. I mean, Facebook still has a lot of work to do, don't get me wrong. But these are the kinds of questions that people who are building these products need to ask.
As we look at the Me Too movement and things that are happening in the media and in Hollywood and make the correlation between what's happening in the tech industry, how do we take advantage of this moment in time and make a difference now, make a change going forward? Because we're by no means reaching the end of where we're at in the tech industry and what's ahead for to be developed, from autonomous cars to artificial intelligence.
Absolutely. Women, for the first time, are speaking up, and our job is to listen. This moment in time is a huge opportunity, not just in Hollywood, but in Washington, for us to listen to what women have to say. And for far too long, these stories have just never been told. But now you see women rising up in the entertainment industry in Washington. I think there are more women running for office now than ever before. And in Silicon Valley, those stories are also getting told. We just don't have Reese Witherspoon or Rose McGowan to talk about it at the Golden Globes, but it is happening here too. And the reason I wrote this book is because I want people to listen. And there are so many women out there who want to be listened to. And the industry needs them. We all do. This is not just Silicon Valley's problem. It is everyone's problem. And I fully believe that the people who are taking us to Mars and building self-driving cars and who have given us rides at the push of a button, I fully believe that they can, if they've changed the world, they can change this too.
There's a profitability factor as well here. And there's some research in the book that says if you have, you know, a gender equality on your board, for example, your company's going to be more profitable. You don't want it to be all women. You don't want it to be all men. Diversity matters in your paychecks and the bottom line as well, right?
Absolutely. There's a great study from the IMF that I think didn't get enough publicity, but they found that if you add one woman to the board or one woman to the management team, profitability will increase 3 to 8%. That's a lot of money when you're talking about companies the size that we're talking about. But at the same time, it doesn't make sense to have an all-woman board or an all-woman management team. In fact, if you swing back in that direction, you start seeing diminishing results. It is balance that is better for obvious reasons.
We have to let you go, but very quickly, do consumers have any power in this game in making a change in the future? What's the role of the rest of us?
Consumers absolutely have power, and I think we've seen it with Twitter. I've spoken to many women who left the site or took a break from the site because they couldn't deal with the sort of hate that was being thrown their way. But, you know, not enough people, you know, are making those decisions because, you know, we only have so many choices when it comes to these products and platforms that we use. So I do believe it is incumbent on the industry and the people who are running these companies to make these things a priority. My argument is that CEOs, I mean, we all have a role to play, but CEOs especially need to make hiring and promoting women a priority. If your boss wants you to do something, you do it. And there are a number of different sort of more prescriptive solutions in the book as to how companies can accomplish this. But if you focus only on sort of raising awareness about these issues, that may not have an impact. But if you focus on giving people the tools to combat their own biases, that will have an impact. So we're talking about things like, you know, only starting the interview process when you have a female candidate or a qualified female candidate of color, or, you know, building structured review and feedback systems, paying people fairly. I mean, the pay gap in Silicon Valley is 5 times the national average. There are a lot of specific things that companies can start doing today to start making these changes.
Emily Chang, thank you so much for being here with us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.